Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. February 26, 2020. There is no fatigue in bestowal. Question: where do you get so much strength to have patience with us? Answer: Kabbalah is the science of reception, not bestowal. Do you think I bestow to you? On the contrary, I receive from you. It is because when you give, you receive. That is why I always have strength. Of course, purely physically, it happens sometimes that the body can no longer function the way it should. But essentially, there is no fatigue in bestowal. On the contrary, you are fulfilled all the time, you are bursting. This is pleasure. I advise you to reach that as soon as possible. Try to teach. Teaching is very beneficial. Expand your circles. Be fruitful and multiply into more and more groups. You will see how it will advance you. Someone who has a group, who teaches at least a few people, advances a great deal by doing so. You cannot even imagine how the Creator will take care of such a person just because a few more people come through him. It is very important that others stand behind you. Try doing this and you will see how wonderful it is. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 12, 2020. The Times of Israel published my new article, Syrian Father Who Went Viral Teaching His Daughter to Laugh at Falling Rockets. Boom. Peals of belly laughter roar from a little girl in her father's arms. Boom. Now zoom out on the scene to place the radiant moment of joy in its heartbreaking context. Abdullah Al-Mohammed teaches his three-year-old daughter Salwa to laugh at the sound of every shell that falls and explodes nearby. As a Syrian trying to survive war and with no place to run, what is left for him to do? In order to reduce or eliminate the trauma of rockets falling, he teaches little Salwa that the sound of falling rockets is funny and that the noise of the shelling is merely a game. Life is beautiful, almost. Abdullah's poignant video went viral on social media and made him an instant internet hero, earning him more than 2 million likes and positive comments, including proposals to adopt the method to help the children in Gaza. In the chaotic reality of war-torn Syria, this father's desperate tactics are an understandable attempt to provide his child with psychological protection against the onslaughts of traumatizing bombardment. He hasn't the time or luxury to research the optimal educational intervention to take when shells fall in the yard. Clearly, there is no good solution or best practice model to calm the terror, only first aid. What form of teaching would be most helpful for such tragic situations? The education needs to be directed toward every member of society, parents and children alike, and must be designed to target the root cause of problems in order to provide a lasting cure. Every member of society needs to understand, according to their level of maturity, that if we want to stop the wars once and for all, we need to try and connect to each other according to the unifying laws of nature. While teaching children to laugh at threats and danger might help them get through immediate frightening situations more comfortably, it holds no long-term benefit because such learning can cause psychoneurotic maladjustments and misperceptions of reality. Such an out-of-place connection between peril and reaction sets up an incorrect relationship in the brain between threat and response. Thus, at times when vigilance is warranted, the amount of concern and caution is inappropriately reduced, leaving them vulnerable to harm. Medically and scientifically, crying and laughing cause the same shock response in the nervous system. So, while the emotion associated with laughter might feel more pleasant, the effect on the body is no healthier than that of crying. Both crying and laughing are a reaction of excitement that exceeds the extent of a person's ability to absorb at a given moment. Therefore, we do need to calm reactions to fears, and only afterward clearly explain the situation and why it is happening. Step by step over time, children need to understand that wars and destruction take place because society has received no education to develop positive relations, and that there is no concern in society to learn how to positively connect above each person's innate divisive drives. They need to know that in order to stop the wars once and for all, we need to try and connect to each other correctly, and in accordance with the unifying laws of nature. If children understood this principle, they would not laugh, and not even smirk. On the contrary, they would tell us straight to our faces, in their naive style, "Parents, fix your thoughts and behaviors, and improve your relationships with each other." Whom do we pray to? Question: if the Creator is the law of nature, then to whom or to what do we pray? Do I understand correctly that we simply resonate with our higher states when we raise a prayer for others? Answer: we do not work in a void. We work with regard to the only law of nature, the integral relationship between all elements of creation. If we, who are so fragmented and distant, who push each other away and desire to use each other, change our behavior and become closer to each other, then we will find ourselves in a spiritual state and see that we are in a completely different world. We need to rise above our egoism and begin to unite among ourselves. Kabbalah speaks about this. The path to this can be twofold. One is the path of suffering, which we are still walking on, or the path of light, that is, attracting the upper light and training in small groups, not all of humanity, but through the tens. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, the 22nd of December 2019. Development of Egoism, the Method of Connection, Part 1. Egoism as a Destroyer of Society. Question: the great Kabbalist of the Middle Ages Ramhal, Rav Moshe Haim Lozato, wrote, "There is no other creation that can do harm like man. He can sin and rebel, and the inclination of a man's heart is evil from his youth, which is not so with any other creature." Dat Tavonet, 154-165. This speaks about the growth of egoism. What is this quality that was revealed even in those times? Answer: usually a desire to enjoy, to be filled, to provide for oneself is manifested in people. It is the same as in animals, only in a more expanded form. But if animals have mutual rejection to ensure security and safety, and the desire to provide themselves with necessities, this is their instinctive urge. A person has no limit to his huge egoistic desire to absorb everything, to capture, and to subjugate. Even if a person does not need this, the quality of envy does not release any person in the course of their development from the desire to absorb everything, to pick up everything and add it to oneself. This is earthly egoism. There are higher manifestations, but this earthly egoism exists in everyone. Therefore, human egoism is not as instinctive as that in animals, which moves them so that they would maintain themselves in a normal, natural state. The person's egoism pushes him to do everything, and wants to suppress and subdue everything. We do not call the desires of animals egoism because they kill and eat their own kind only when they are hungry. In a person, however, this manifests beyond all of his animalistic needs. From one generation to the next, human egoism grows unlike that of the animals. Therefore, it comes to a state where it is no longer possible to do anything with the ego, which begins to destroy the connections between people in society, and even in families. Egoism becomes vicious, not an engine that moves us forward, but a destroyer, as it initially was in ancient Babylon. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, July 1, 2019. The Uniqueness of the Force that Operates Us, Part 8. Turn to the Law of Nature. Question: how can one turn to an invariable, perfect power, to the law of nature, so that he would give me something to change? Answer: one can turn to him only with one request, that he will help us see the world correctly. Then there will not be any problems. If we really ask him, He does everything so that this world will become a very bitter place for us and very difficult, so that it will confuse us. As we move forward and develop, we get more and more obstacles. Therefore, we have more and more reasons to turn to the Creator. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, the 24th of November 2019. New Life Number 1191, The Mechanism of Suppression.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitzan Mazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the mechanism of suppression. Different things happen to us throughout life. There are things that we remember, and there are things that we put aside. We'd like to understand, why did nature build us this way, with such a mechanism, and how should we correctly work with it? Nitza, please. Yeah, the suppression mechanism is one of the mental mechanisms in a person, which is responsible to put away different emotional content, thoughts, urges, into the part called the subconscious, in a way that a person then consciously doesn't remember what happened, some event, some experience, something that happened, could be when he was a young child, when he was growing up, when he was a soldier in the battlefield. There could be different states in life where a person has no access to that mechanism, meaning he doesn't decide what content will now go to the, let's call it, the storage of our subconscious. There's like this higher kind of intelligence that decides that, no, this content, this experience might be too much for a person to deal with, and so right now we'll put it in the storage, it'll be locked in some drawer. Consciously, a person won't remember actually what happened. This is how our suppression mechanism actually works. So first of all, it's a very smart mechanism. We'd really like to understand it. We see that nature created this mechanism, so maybe the first question is, what does a person need this kind of mechanism for that decides what to suppress and what not to? Our comprehensive nature is the desire to receive, meaning the will to enjoy, and therefore to receive what's beneficial and to push away the harmful. This is truly the essence at the very basis of our nature, and everything else is built upon that. And therefore, first of all, we make sure that we push away the harmful. We always look at what can cause us harm, and how can we move away or push it away. And after that, after we're sure that we're somehow keeping ourselves from harm, then we also look at how can we enjoy something, acquire, draw closer. And then this is the way we act. So the suppression mechanism acts as a part of pushing away what's harmful to a person. Yeah. Okay, now, what's interesting in this mechanism is that a person doesn't control it. There's like a smarter system that decides for the person what should be pushed away and what can you leave. There's systems here that are really in stages, the still, vegetative, animate, and the speaking in a person, meaning there are things that are not in my control at all, that they're part of my body, and my body is built already in such a way, if it's healthy and everything, that it knows what's good for it and what's not. Afterwards, there's the emotional system. Also, what's good, what's bad. It works instinctively, relatively. And from the emotional system, we're moving to the mind, and from the mind to the intellect, and so on. Meaning, there are systems over systems here that all work on receiving what's beneficial and pushing away the harmful. This is the essence of my life. This is the main thing, that in each and everything, this is what I try to do. And would it be true to say that this mechanism is a part of who I am, of myself, or is it some kind of a superior system? It depends on the person himself, how he accepts it, sees it. But what you can actually say is that if I'm already asking about how to use or the usage of this mechanism, then I divide it at least into two. That a part of it I can't influence. It exists in the cells, in my body, on the degrees of the still, the vegetative, and the animate in me that I'm not in control of, but I can be in control of the speaking part in me, the human part in me. The measure to which on this degree I bring the beneficial closer and push away the harmful. And do I correctly understand what the harmful is and push it away, and what's beneficial and draw that closer? Because we're all very much confused in this regard, where to this day all of mankind is really confused in this respect, and we're all the time getting blows, descents, shatterings. What I'd like to understand is, how does this mechanism of suppression work? Suppose a person experiences something traumatic. There is the suppression mechanism that starts working and at some point suppresses the event as though it did not happen. Here, you're not talking as if it didn't happen, but you're talking about forgetfulness. I'm talking about the act of suppression. Something happened. Suppression doesn't mean that I forget, that it disappears from me. Suppression, to the contrary, I keep it in my memory and I move away from it, because even if I moved away 10 or 100 meters from it, let's suppose we measure it in meters, still I keep it because it might be a real threat to me. Meaning, it's not forgetfulness or just rejecting it. It's that I move away from being harmed. And I move away and keep this distance precisely because I better and better, or more and more, understand, evaluate the harm that it might bring me. Meaning, it could be more harmful if I'll have to deal with this content, confront. Yeah. Okay, the act of suppression itself, like psychologists describe it, it's a one-time act that afterwards there's some kind of mental energy that's invested in keeping it someplace far away or closed. Now, many times what happens is that at certain times, it could be when you're sleeping, when you're dreaming, suddenly some of that content can pop up into your consciousness. Sometimes it happens with people that are shell-shocked and so on, and suddenly they wake up from this nightmare. It's as though the content is supposed to be isolated there, but the guard as if fell asleep, and the content surfaced to the consciousness, and usually a person gets some kind of anxiety or is incapable of dealing with it, and so on. What can you add about this mechanism that really in certain states of a different state of consciousness that a person's in, like when he's sleeping, dreaming, and so on, that this content suddenly surfaces? Why does it happen? How does it happen? Does it have a purpose? Our brain never stops. It's never completely shut off. Never. Otherwise, we die. So it has different systems that are working and switching, And precisely when we're sleeping, it works very strongly, because when we're sleeping, different external impressions don't interfere through our five senses, but it arranges the different impressions that it has according to different levels, connections, according to everything, and also makes room for the future impressions that will come tomorrow. And therefore, what's clear is, and I don't exactly know what you want to hear from me, but that precisely when we're sleeping, we scrutinize things that we went through and how to arrange them for tomorrow, and everything happens subconsciously, and maybe I won't feel these things the next day, but they pass through me, act in me, and prepare me for the next day. And the next day, I wake up a new person that has different impressions from the previous day. Maybe I don't feel them, but they come gradually and accumulate. And this way, each and every moment, I actually become a new person as a result of this entire mechanism that scrutinizes what I went through and supplements what I previously had and prepares me for the next day. I have a question. Suppose we define that place in a person or in the mind where we suppress or where we put our traumatic experiences that we don't want to remember. Like you said, that we move away from it and keep our distance. So, suppose that place is like some kind of storage, that I put all my garbage there. No, I put something there. After some time, something else happened, maybe I put that there too, maybe something else, and so on. Now, gradually, I have this storage that's filled with different things that I suppressed. Now, I understand that I suppress these things in order to guard myself, protect myself. There's this unconscious mechanism in me that if there are things that can harm me, it suppresses them. Now I want to ask, suppose I have this storage with many suppressed things. Am I supposed to take things out of that storage later on to work with them? If we optimize the system, what happens? What's supposed to happen is that everything that you went through in life, somehow, consciously or unconsciously, will have to surface from the storage of your memory. And consciously or unconsciously, you will use all of these things, that nothing in life went by just so, but you will need all of these moments at the end of your correction, for the end of your correction. So nothing was put there in that storage just so, incidentally, from all the incarnations that our soul went through. That's also in the storage. Of course, why not? Yeah, interesting. So what does the wisdom of Kabbalah that you teach say? How to correctly work with the storage if nothing's redundant and everything is necessary in order to advance and evolve a person? How to work with what's in the storage? You don't have to work with the storage. Every day you have to be as a new person. What happened, happened. And the day before, today, I'm trying as much as I can to reach a more whole, complete, and a higher correction. And what about the storage? It's not important to me. I don't have the ability to use it in any other way. But upon everything that I'm experiencing today, that I'm going through, that I feel, this is how I have to work with these things. That's the most correct kind of behavior. to accept what's being arranged now by Providence and to scrutinize these things correctly and upon them to advance towards correction. So just to see if I understand, there are things that a person experiences in life, maybe even in previous incarnations, that the suppression mechanism put in our storage. And everything that we went through in life is necessary for our development. Yes. Okay. Just like I didn't put these things consciously into my storage, but this is how the mechanism works. The very same way, I don't have to care about how to work with it, but I have to worry about what's ahead. What's ahead and the things that surface in me right now. Yeah. Okay. Up until now, we talked about a person that experienced different traumas in life. Now, we live in the Israeli society, for example. Does an entire society have like a collective mechanism of suppression, like the entire Israeli society, things that can harm it, things that they can't deal with and they push it away? Like a collective memory? Yes, but this suppression can be conscious and unconscious. It could happen subconsciously, both in a person and in a society and in an entire nation and in all of mankind. And they're all interconnected and interdependent. So there's a mechanism that does this naturally, automatically, that I don't interfere in. It happens by my will to receive that only wants to enjoy life, and therefore it does it without my awareness, to the measure to which I'm ready to use my evil to correct it and use it for the better, then I take these parts out, meaning I'm ready, and then I get them from the, as if from the storage, and by that I correct the past. So when you look at the Israeli society and the processes it went through, and its suppression mechanisms as a society, and undoubtedly this is a society of people that went through a lot. This people, this nation, has good reasons to suppress things. Unfortunately, this people suppresses everything and doesn't want to learn from the past. So this is interesting, because when does the content surface from the storage and you have to work with it? And when should it be left there at peace? So we can see that little children and undeveloped people throw away what happened a moment ago and start anew. And for them, it's easier to be that way because this is how the protective force works on them. Yeah, they don't have to deal with what happened. Right. And the same goes for our nation. It also has to do with being a stubborn nation, people that doesn't want to acknowledge the past and what happened yesterday as if it does not exist today. It's foolishness. Maybe it's a protective force without which we couldn't survive after everything that we went through in history. But this is a fact that this is how it happens, and this our problem, because were it in front of us, it would position us in demand for correction. And this way we think that everything's fine. So what happened, happened. It's in the past. It's gone. Were I to take you on a tour in the storage of the suppressed things of the Jewish people. Ooh, that's something really terrible. A few words about what is there in the storage of the suppressed things of the Jewish people. No more than hate and death. This is what they suppress, death and hate, that this is their experience throughout. Throughout history, that's all there is, hate and death. In our storage, there's nothing else to remember. And this is the only thing that we don't want to remember. It's pretty natural that we'll be afraid of remembering hate and death if you're suppressed all the time and so on. You put it in your storage. But does it help our future? if it keeps you from, let's say, going crazy, and in order to continue with life, then okay, but if by that you can correct your near future, but it means that then you have to correctly process the content. So how do you do it? Right? Therefore, there has to be a system, an educational system, that's very important, broad, powerful, that teaches the nation what to do. And this is something that we don't have at all. We don't learn our past, and we don't teach the younger generation about the previous generation. What do you mean we don't study our past? What to do in order for it not to happen again? Why did it happen? So it won't happen again. Who did it depend on? Were we also a part of what happened to us? Or is this something that was completely out of our hands? Suppose we study the Torah. So there it says that actually the Jewish people is the cause of everything. That we are a free people. That we can determine our entire future, and so much so that the entire world depends on us. And what follows is that we're miserable. We depend on the entire world, and we don't want to acknowledge that there's really the possibility and opportunity of being the cause of good for a good future. Okay, so what we have is the storage of the Jewish people where we suppressed all the death and the hate and everything. And now we're at a certain point where we have to take something out of that storage in order to start working with it correctly and building a better future. We see that in our time, the hate toward the Jewish people is on the rise again. And it's not like it was 90 years ago or 100 years ago in Germany. But it's all around the world. And we don't want to acknowledge that. We say it's incidental, it's nothing. We don't want to acknowledge what happened then. And we don't want to talk about it now in order to prevent it. Because from day to day we see where this is going. So if I understand correctly, then the Jewish people is continuing to suppress things even when they see that things are repeating themselves in front of their eyes. This is called a stubborn nation. The desire to suppress things, to not see reality for what it is, in order not to deal with it actually. Maybe because of the fear of not knowing how to deal with it. No, we know how to deal with it, but we don't want to. So you're saying, in this storage, there's death and hate, and today we see that it's on the rise again from a new direction, from a different direction. And instead of asking, why is it happening, where are we hated, we say, no, we're not hated. It's because of this and because of that. We tell ourselves different stories in order not to deal with this terrible question. It's also very hard to accept that the entire world hates specifically us. The entire world is willing to unite around their hate toward us. It's like you're even telling yourself, it sounds exaggerated. What do you think, that everyone really hates you? But actually I understand that specifically this question of why am I being hated and what do I have to do so it won't happen again? This is actually what will lead me to a new life. Meaning I have to overcome some kind of a psychological, or I don't know how to call it, barrier as a nation, as a people, in order to be willing to ask this question, because only then can something new develop from it. Yeah. Okay, so we started with nature building in man the smart mechanism that brings closer what's beneficial, pushes away what's harmful, instinctively. Yeah, instinctively. And there's also the suppression process or the suppression mechanism that pushes away things that a person can't deal with and so on. This is a mechanism that also exists in the Jewish people, in the Israeli society, and that inner storage, there is especially suppression and death. So what now? We don't want to open the storage. I understand that it's the right thing to do, because what goes on in that storage might bury us. This I understand. Now you're saying that from this point on, there is something that we have to do with what exists in the storage of the Jewish people. So how should we work with it? I understand why the hate and death were thrown in there in order to allow our survival as a nation throughout history. What's the right thing to do now? How to work with these suppressed emotions of the Jewish people? I can't tell you. The more I try to open up this mechanism, the future, a vision of the future for the Jewish people, for the people of Israel, I'm not succeeding at it. And it's dozens of years now that I'm trying to write and talk and explain in different ways. No, I'm not succeeding at it. Maybe the problem's in me, I don't know. But I can't. On the personal level, when a person reaches a certain state where this content starts surfacing in him, if he doesn't deal with it, meaning correctly processes it and so on, we see that it really becomes harmful to him. On the physical level, on the mental level, I want to ask about the social level. When we're not advancing toward the correct scrutiny and the correct treatment of the situation, does it also cause us to be ill as a society? Yeah, we've built different such mechanisms. Today it's hard to peel off the Jewish people those qualities, traits, habits that they have acquired throughout their history, because they were all the time under pressure, hate, rejection, and so on. And therefore it's a part of our culture, of our education, of everything that we are as a nation, our literature. We can see it in everything. What can you do? We also have to understand that according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, it's not the matter of the Jewish people, but it's a matter of the corporeal and the spiritual nature, that both of these forms of nature exist in the Jewish people, the corporeal and the spiritual form, and they collide in a certain way, and therefore every Jew is included of both somewhat. And even though that he doesn't understand it, but he feels that every time he's in this inner kind of explosion, that he has this kind of inner split. And therefore, this is how it is. Once we're with the nations of the world, once we're with Israel. And this is how it is all the time. So in order to understand these matters and to bring them to some kind of equilibrium, we yet have to talk. Last question. What do you wish the Jewish people in regard to what they have stored away in their storage? Just to understand, why are we hated? Not to postpone this question, but actually, why are we hated? Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.